one of the main themes in the Bhagavad Gita, which are the teachings of Krishna, is the description of the soul. The soul is described to be eternal. The soul is described now to be temporarily embodied. The body is compared to a yantra. Yantra rudaya mayaya. It is said that the living being is like living in a yantra. What is a yantra? A yantra is a machine. So it's said that the soul in this world is living within a machine, and this machine being the material body that we now have. It is also like that. Just like the car goes into the garage, the body sometimes also goes. And what's the difference? One mechanic, another type of a mechanic, same thing. When it's bad, they have to change parts. So the body is a machine in that sense. So one of the first principles that we understand is that the soul, it is said that the soul is pervading the entire body with consciousness. So one symptom of the soul is consciousness. It is stated that the soul, nainam chindanti sastrani nainam dhati pavaka, the soul cannot be cut to pieces, it cannot be burned by fire, dried by the wind, or drowned in water. The soul is not slain when the body is slain. So when the body dies, the soul does not. The soul is described as eternal. Nichanam nichanam chaitanas chaitananam ekubhavanam yuvidatikamam. It is said that the soul, the living beings are all eternal. That eternal living being is dependent on the... It's never independent. Let us say that. The soul, although the soul is eternal, we always depend on something external. We cannot just exist independent. Like here also, we all depend on something. We depend on a place, we depend on relationships, we depend on food, we depend on so many things, shelter. So we always depend on shelter. Ultimately, desire has its root in the soul. Although now that we are embodied, it is said the soul is like in a dormant state. At this point, the soul is not so active. The soul is asleep. But lending its energy to the mind, lending its energy to the senses. So we see, we smell, we hear, we think. But all this energy is coming from the soul. Our heart beats, the blood is running through our veins, and all going by the energy of the soul. When the soul is withdrawn from the body, everything stops. So it is the soul that is the spark of life. The size is described as a 10,000 times the tip of a hair. So that's very small. Microscopic or atomic in size, very small. So in this way the soul is not seen so easy, but the soul is perceived by its symptoms, the life symptoms and consciousness. So here we are, that which gives us consciousness is the soul, although now the soul itself is in a dormant state, sleeping state, and the mind is doing the thinking, feeling and willing. When we become purified, when we become purified from material attachment and material conditioning, then we can come back to the spiritual platform. On the spiritual platform, thinking, feeling and willing comes directly from the soul. As I said, the soul is always, we are always dependent in every situation, never independent. So it is said that ultimately we are dependent on Krishna. Ultimately, we are dependent on the Supreme Lord, because he is the provider of everything, and only within a relationship with the Supreme Lord can we be completely satisfied. Many relationships, many, but not one that is perfect. Not with any place. There's no place in the world that is the perfect place. Even our dream place. Think of your ideal place where you would really want to go right now. Would you want to stay there forever? Even home sweet home. Even in Beograd, would you want to stay there forever? In Amsterdam? Want to stay forever in Amsterdam? So, where to stay forever? We cannot find any place in this material world where we can stay forever. Although we exist forever. That is the point. But if you think about it, there is a famous novel of Simone de Beauvoir about a person who found the elixir for immortality. In the Middle Ages somewhere. And he was immortal. So, but then he wasn't sure that it worked. So he's thinking, okay, let me test it on a mouse. So he said, give it to this mouse, and then I'll kill the mouse, and we'll see if this mouse can be killed or not. So he gave the elixir to the mouse, tried to kill the mouse, and he couldn't kill the mouse. And just then he realized, I'm going to live forever with a mouse. It was like a whole thing, you know. Him and the mouse. So that was a whole, an eternal relationship, and suddenly he just... Well, in the beginning it was a lot of fun, of course, and because he didn't die. He found himself a wonderful lady. He wasn't growing any older also, stayed fresh and young. So that part was good. And but yeah, although he loved the ladies very much, he never really met one that he wanted to give eternity. Right? He thought, you know, like, living with a mouse is one thing, but, you know. So, therefore, he never gave eternity to any lady. And the result was that, it became a little difficult. They died, and he didn't. And then his sons were waiting for dead to die, and they didn't, and he didn't. And they even tried to poison him, and that didn't work either. So, then all his family members died. He started a whole new thing again and again, you know. But after some time, he lost all taste. Because, basically, there was nothing in the material world that he wanted to go on with forever. There was no one that he wanted to give eternity to. There was no place where he wanted to stay. Nothing. Everything. So after some time, everything lost its sense for him. And he just stopped doing anything. He didn't enter into any relationship anymore. And in the end, he's just in a psychiatric clinic, sitting there. You know, although he's not actually like that, but he's just decided to just sit there and not be interested in anything. And of course, it's a novel, so there is this nurse who is trying to kind of bring him back to his senses, and she tries all kinds of things on him, and nothing works. Even sex doesn't attract him. So even with that, but at one point, she steers his wheelchair right in the water, and then, after some time, he swims and comes out of the water. He could have just stayed there, because he couldn't die anyway. So why not just stay underwater? So the fact that he came out of the water meant he was starting the cycle again. But that is all that that was going on. It is a book written by an existentialist philosopher. The existentialist philosophers are looking for sense in life, in this world, and they say, what is the real meaning in life? Real meaning that we're looking for has to be eternal. because we are eternal. And that can only be found in the relationship with Krishna. Therefore, when we speak of the soul and the qualities of the soul, we cannot separate the soul from its relationship with Krishna. That's not possible. You can speak, give a whole talk on the soul and the qualities of the soul, but if you don't mention the relationship that exists between Krishna and the soul, or the Supreme Lord and the soul, then you'll never get to the nature of the soul. Because everything is the energy of the Lord. The soul is also a spark of the energy of the Lord. And in that way, without a spiritual connection, one cannot find peace in life. This is the philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita is the book where all the Vedic knowledge from India is summarized. And this book can offer us, although it is all given in a condensed form, it gives the deepest conclusions. So a relationship with Krishna, that is there, eternally existing. But some people, they ignore that relationship with Krishna. And others, they are acting upon that relationship with Krishna. The relationship with Krishna is one of that both are eternal. Krishna is eternal, we are eternal, but we are dependent on Krishna. Krishna is not dependent on us, we are dependent on him. Everything, I mean, if the sun doesn't shine, then it gets difficult. If it doesn't rain, it gets difficult. It's not under our control. If there's no air, it gets a little difficult. Like that. So we are dependent on Krishna for providing anything and everything. The relationship with Krishna, therefore, is one of understanding his supremacy over us. He's not equal, he's superior to us. Krishna, being superior, it is said, Maya Jakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam, he's the supreme controller. And therefore, it is also said that he is the proprietor. One famous story is about Srila Prabhupada, our guru, our spiritual master. He was in India, and a wealthy businessman came. And the question was asked to this man by Prabhupada, well, what kind of business are you doing? He said, oh, I'm manufacturing glass. Fine. So where are you getting the ingredients from this glass? He said, oh, from silicium. We're making it from silicium. Where are you getting that? From sand. Then, from where are you getting the sand? Well, since Prabhupada was a sadhu, a saintly man, therefore he said, from God. So Prabhupada said, that's right. So you are taking the sand, you're taking what belongs to God, you change it a little bit, and then you sell it. What do we call that? What if I take your car, I change the color, and I sell it? What do you call that? Stealing. Yes. Thief. Thief. Yes. Prabhupada said, So you are nothing but a thief. And the man was smiling. He said, well, you know, no, but I, he said, no, but I am giving from the Prophet, I'm giving to God also. I'm giving. Prabhupada said, oh, you are only little thief. You are only little thief. That was it, right? That he didn't let him off the hook, you know. Thief. So this is a fact. Anyone who is not recognizing Krishna as the supreme proprietor is a thief. So most of us are thieves, actually. That's the situation. But what we do is we all steal, and together we just divide, right? Whatever we've stolen. So in this way, and that we consider honesty. No, we must divide it honestly. Right? Everyone gets an equal part. Yeah? But we started out with stealing in the first place. So this is mundane morality, mundane honesty. But true honesty is that we understand that Krishna is the proprietor, that we are the caretaker on his behalf, and that we can in this way take something for our own living, but then we must offer to Krishna. And that's not so difficult as it sounds, because one can have a house, right? It's a flat, and I'm sure that upstairs the flat is very similar. Right? It must be like the same layout, kitchen in the same place, bedroom in the same place, bathroom, maybe the washing machine is even in the same place, because it's sort of set up for that, to put your washing machine there. Right? So probably all the way up, a whole bunch of washing machines just above each other. So everything is the same. Probably good chance, you know, in the bathroom, the same sort of bottles found here as there. But then some differences. Some differences. There's an altar. There are some books. Yes, many, many pots, many pans in the kitchen. Same upstairs. But one difference, if you look in the fridge. No meat in this fridge. No, no meat. No fish. No fish. No eggs in this fridge. You can look if you want to. If you find any, let me know. Then I want an explanation. These things are not there. So in this way, living while accepting Krishna as the proprietor doesn't mean that one lives so different from everyone else. But in some ways we do, because we will not live in a way that is not approved by Krishna. That's what it means. So the Bhagavad Gita is pointing out what is approved and what is not approved. In terms of foodstuffs, yes, I said it, vegetarian. In terms of other things are also given. No intoxication, no gambling, no illicit sex. All these things are given as a code of life. So one who accepts that I offer this life to Krishna, his life becomes an uplifting experience. One who doesn't gets himself deeper entangled in the material world. And that's what's happening with many souls who are not accepting Krishna, who are not dedicating their life to Krishna. They are struggling with the material energy. And one tries to squeeze enjoyment out of the material energy, and it works sometimes. But not all the time, and not in the long run. In the long run, it doesn't work. And even no matter how good it is, it's never enough to be satisfied. This is the problem of material existence. Most of the time, it's not so good. And then, even if it is good, still not good enough to be satisfied. So then, yeah. Are you satisfied? Yes, I'm really satisfied. Are you happy? Yes. Sounds very happy. Didn't sound like very convincing. You know? Are you happy? It didn't sound like yes. No, because material life is not like that. Always something. Like he was. I was complaining about the weather, and he said, the wise man said, "Why complain about the weather? It's the weather." Yeah, you can't trust it. It's always. I mean, last week everyone was, "Oh, it's so hot, so hot, so hot. Oh, it's so hot. Now it's so, it's so wet, so wet." So wet. What can we say? Material world. But the soul will be satisfied in the relationship with Krishna. And that is very nice. Instead of being selfish, all about me, I'm the most important. Instead of it, Krishna becomes important, and Krishna's dependents become important. So then we serve Krishna, and we serve all the living beings. And this is then Krishna consciousness in a nutshell. I don't know how long I'm supposed to talk. I mean, this should be about it. Let's get some reactions going.
I was going to, look at why you complained about the weather.
Why I complained about the weather? Because I have a cold. I got a cold. So I liked it. So for me, the warm weather was good.
Okay.
So it's like, I mean, it's the last thing I need, cold weather. Full of my whole chest is closed up, so I want nice warm weather. Warm. But even that will not be enough. No, we can be transcendental and still complain about the weather, because that's not a problem at all. You can always complain about the weather. That goes on. No, not only mind. It's like you're just not too worried about it, but we are personalists, we are bodies, you know, so we can experience, yes, it's bad weather, yes, it's good weather. What horrible weather, what a miserable place. Let's go to the spiritual world. It's just that, it's not that I'm getting all depressed, oh my God, it's bad weather, and that I'm under the weather, you know, as they say. No, but we can say, boy, it's bad and boats. It's miserable. It is. It's the normal Amsterdam weather again.
But it's going to shine again.
Yes, and then it's going to rain again. So, if you want to rely on the weather, and some people want to see the sunny side. Some people see the rainy side. Some see the sunny side and the rainy side. Ultimately, we say
there is no sign.
Yeah, there is no sign. It's the weather.
After the rain comes the rainbow.
Yeah, and after the rainbow comes the dry season. After the dry season comes the snow,
and the pot of gold.
Yeah, summer with the pot with gold and the rainbow. No, in other words, you can always try and look at the positive perspective for the material world. That's nice, but not nice enough, huh? You think? Yeah, anyone can speak without a hand. No hands, just speak.
Well, you said in this material world, the soul is given this energy to the mind, to the body, and things like that. And in the spiritual world, you said it's also given this opportunity, it's given the energy to think and feel and move.
What's the difference? In the spiritual world, it comes directly from the soul. So now the soul is like a spark of life in the body. But in the spiritual world, the spiritual body is not separated. The soul and the spiritual body are one. So the thinking, feeling and willing comes from the soul, and therefore the soul is the thinking, feeling and willing then is not limited like here in this world. Here it's all limited, very limited. But there,
but then it's not really unlimited. Anymore,
isn't it? Also thinking. Different kind of thinking than here. Because here it's thinking in ignorance. There's thinking in knowledge.
Is it possible that a soul can leave the spiritual body?
No. When the soul leaves the spiritual world, the spiritual body is also existing. It's just not manifest to us now. That's all. But it's still there.
Mm-hmm. So the only difference is that it's limited
here.
And
the spiritual world is not unlimited. Yeah. Everything here is limited. Our happiness is limited. There it's unlimited. And already you can do it here if you realize the spiritual consciousness. Then you can also have unlimited happiness. It's rarely attained.
How does it work this with the soul and super soul, no? Like in a
tell me what you know about it.
Like in a material world, there is a soul. It's placed in a heart, and by the soul, there is always the best friend, the super soul. So the super soul. it's always with us in any kind of body, in any kind of like whatever we are in this material world. But I don't know in which moment then it's like our super soul is joining our soul. It's
from the moment you enter to the material world.
To the material world.
At the time when the jiva enters through the material world.
There is one kind of stage in between as well, when we can kind of still like...
In the body of Mahavishnu you are? Mm-hmm. So there, the super soul is not there, but when the glance of Mahavishnu impregnates the living being into the material world, then super soul is there. Yeah, but it's only discussion, so you have to make a contribution, not a question this time. Well, explain your question. Let's come with your question.
I wanted to ask about the transplantation of organ to somebody else.
Yeah.
When somebody receives an organ, many times it happens that the person completely changes his character and the behavior. Something to do with karma or consciousness even.
My first question to you is that really true, that many times the person changes the character?
No.
Yes, that's true. I have a cousin, he had lung transplantation. He even changed the color of hair.
Lungs?
Lungs. Lungs.
Well,
having operations.
I have an explanation, but... maybe the subtle body of the deceased person who gave the organ was still attached to the organ when it was transplanted, and in this way it could be an explanation how his presence starts to influence that person. No. It's about the only explanation I can come up with, but if you can come up with a better one, then I'm...
I think also genetically, I know genetical explanation, because like scientific, because genetical material is in that organ, and genetical material is only also in sweating, even in skin. In if people touch each other, they also change. They they become similar. People who live together for a long time, they actually, by touching each other, they exchange the genetical material. This is like from scientific point of view, that's really like that.
My God.
And then and also from that organ, genetical material then mixed with genetical material.
It's dangerous. I never heard.
Yeah, that's why. That's really.
We heard about AIDS, but this is worse.
That's why in Vaishnava culture, for example, people don't actually touch each other.
It changes
because enough karma we have already. I mean.
Especially a heart center, right? If you see somebody's heart,
yes, what's that?
It's a serious part.
It's really a main heart surgery.
And you can take a risk, you know.
The soul, yeah, it means soul is in the heart. What happens
anyway,
then?
The soul is near the heart.
See what you've done, Avadhut. Now you have to repair this.
I'll explain it.
You have to do something about it. You can't just leave it. Next, we're going to...
I would like to ask a question.
I heard an explanation about the transplantation of the heart. It's like when your body dies, your soul leaves the body, also the super soul. If you have a heart transplant, the body doesn't die, physically speaking. And the soul is, it said, is in the heart, but it's near the heart. It's not
definitely
in the heart.
Oh, no, that part is there.
If you take out the heart and put another one in,
yes.
It's just a machine, you know.
Yeah, it's a machine. Yeah. The heart, I mean, the soul is in the region of the heart together with the super soul and stays in the region of the heart. If you take out the organ at the heart and you put in a new heart, doesn't mean that the soul is changing or that the super soul is changing. Nothing is changing. That is the same. And if you get any qualities that are different than you had before, then it can. The only explanation that, as I said, can be that there is some subtle entity still connected to that organ, you know, who didn't want to leave and who starts to influence us. But we are still the same. Nothing changed. And as far as the genetic as explanation, I don't know. That's also offered here by.
The karma is changing. I don't have an explanation.
Okay, Guranga.
Because according to Bhagavad Gita, everybody has a particular guna or quality. Some person is in tamas, some person is in rajas, or some person is in sattva, or a mixture. So every organ is also composed of a particular mixture of the gunas. So if you take out one organ of one person and you put it in another person, and you get the gunas, the qualities of certain qualities, depending on what quality. So there's explanations that, or a description that someone gave his organ to another person who was smoking, for example, and the person also started smoking. Because he had that particular guna, that particular quality, and then he gave that giving his organ, he gave it to someone else.
Okay.
Yeah, but
that's almost like in certain tribal, you know, traditions, right? That the organ has a power, and then you're going to eat the organ, you know, that's like to get the power from the other.
But actually, it all goes together. All these explanations, they actually fit. They are just different dimensions of the same.
But anyway, Uddhava's point is the correct understanding that there is no new living entity. That's for sure. We're still the same person, same living entity. Even if there's a heart transplant or anything transplant, same person that we were before.
Still in the material world.
Yeah, and whatever is added to the body may have an influence, maybe genetically, maybe through the gunas, or maybe through the spirits. Who knows?
They change organ, they change karma or something.
Maybe karma.
But it can be purified.
Then you can fix karma.
The karma is the same explanation as the guna.
Same explanation as the guna, says Guranga.
Can be purified, at least. I can take your part and purify it.
There's a hint.
Because we are all some kind of sejjana. We're separated from our soul.
I know better.
Come to the boy. So this is
anyway. Paula wants to say something.
No, and actually not me, but the gentleman I was translating for had a question.
Yeah.
Wilt u zelf vragen?
Ja,
ik
moet
het
zeggen.
Oké. Hij verstaat Nederlands, hoor.
Oh, dat is anders. Ja, oké. Okay. Mij vraagt als iemand heel erg diep depressief wordt paniek en alles kwijt, geen zin meer leven, thuis helemaal eenzaam wordt, helemaal donker. Ik weet dat het gebeurt me thuis. Maar heel raar gebeurt met mij, daarom ben ik ook gecommenteerd. En dat is, nou, iemand paniek, depressief, en dat is, weet ik niet meer leven, wat moet ik doen? Best dus gelijk een bieden van God, of wat uw advies.
Okay. So what to do when you are suffering from this depression, dark at home, and alone, and all these things, and what is the best advice? Yeah, if somebody is drinking, then stop drinking.
Thinking.
Stop thinking.
Sorry.
No, that's why I was saying you say that. Stop thinking. Yeah, stop thinking. No, don't think. Stop thinking. Well, I know I do it in English. Or should it be? Otherwise, I think we're doing English. English. What to do? There is no magic solution for a person who is suffering from depression, because he's in a particular frame of mind. And even if he suddenly gets some spiritual process, he cannot fully take advantage of it in one moment, you know. So the only way for a person to get out of a depression is he must do it himself. He must walk out of it, you know. Like he said, stop thinking. If you sit in your depression, oh, poor me, everything is so difficult, then no one can pull you out, right? No matter how much good advice you get, how much Krishna advice you get, how many people are nice to you, you just go, oh, you just indulge in your depression. So the only way is you must walk away from the depression, and then you look for a positive environment. So the devotees, they have that. That's for sure. They have a positive solution. So leave the depression. Say no to it. Even if you feel it coming, say no. I am not going to go into this. I'm not going to allow it to take over my mind. I just say no. And go and be with the devotees. Take shelter of Krishna consciousness and see how it can how it improves your life. Because once you take up devotional service, then everything you do has a good result. Even if right now you don't really feel completely happy yet, doesn't matter. Still, all the things you do in relationship with Krishna, they're giving you good results on the long term, because you get eternal benefit from it. So in that, and then gradually the present situation will also improve. So just carry on with devotional service and turn away from depression. The biggest problem with depression is meditating on the depression, right? Like he was saying. That's the biggest thing. Because we know many such people, you know, like, okay. I also have some people who are depressed and who write me or who try to take my energy. And then recently someone said and started to speak about suicide. And I said, well, if you talk like this, you know, then there's nothing I can do for you, you know. Now it's like, it's gone too far. It's gone so far, I can't help, you know. It's like, this is too big, I will not be able to convince you not to do it. You can only convince yourself not to do it. So when you're finished with talking about that and thinking about that, then you come back. And I'm not going to deal with this. Because otherwise it just goes on and on and on. And never gives a solution. Anyway, that's what I think. I don't know what others think.
Sometimes people who have depressions, they get something out of it.
They always do. That's like, why they
have. They have to be, say no to doing depression and be accountable to doctors. But sometimes people kind of like to have the depression because they're getting something out of it.
Yeah, self-pity. You know, I mean, there's a certain amount of self-pity, which is, there's an addiction to that, yeah. And also attention from others in that way.
Usually, yeah. Depression is caused by a feeling or pain that is suppressed, that they don't want to feel. So everything else gets bad, except the feeling that they don't want to recognize. So usually it's best to find the feeling that is causing this repression and try to solve that or express those emotions, because that usually solves the repression.
Oh yeah, well that's psychology.
I think depression is when you want something you can't get in this material world, then you get depressed. That is so better.
We always want something.
Yeah, well that's it.
Can I say something?
Anybody can say something without asking, without putting up fingers.
When on 1993 in Belgrade, it was a very difficult situation. It was really, I mean, it's not possible to imagine, it's very difficult to explain. Just everything was, people became, generally, everyone was completely depressed, and it was so much killing, and I don't know, I was not taking intoxication, and I just wanted to stay straight, and I was working, and like that. But at one point, I was fed up with, because everyone was depressed. And I didn't have any more communication with people. And then I was thinking, like, this life is for nothing. Like, I had, like, sort of, okay, I'm going to commit suicide. Because it was too much, like, killing and everything. It's just too much. And then I was reading a book from Russian writer who escaped to America. And he wanted, at one point, he was fed up with the whole situation there. And he couldn't go back and like that. He wanted to commit suicide. But what happened, he met devotees in Central Park. and they explained to him laws of karma. And they said if you commit suicide, then you have to take birth again, and all explanations were there. And I read that, and that's why I stopped completely to think about suicide. And anyway, I was busy with some spiritual things, and I just was going on. After that, I came to Holland and like that. But Krishna really, I want to say, has his ways, like to save somebody, if he really, because it was like I even didn't even get the book from devotees, but I read it in a book of Russian writer, like who was not devotee himself, but he said they saved me from committing suicide.
Okay, and well that's I don't think that's the main topic though, you know.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
because I mean I don't know if you wanna.
Like about those people, I think some such explanation can turn people from doing.
Yeah.
Because if you have to do pass.
What does he think over there on the other side of the wall in the kitchen?
Hi.
Now, what's his response to everything that the people say?
Ik ben verteld, ik ben last 2 jaar heel erg voor dan gaan.
Misschien moet je even daar gaan zitten dat je de mensen kunt zien.
Nou, ik ging even vertellen voor mezelf. Ik ben vroeger heel sterk iemand geweest, altijd door mensen geholpen. Ik ben ondernemers geweest, zakelijk geweest, altijd dit en soort dingen. Maar als twee jaar geleden, ik ben door een paar problemen gelijk gekomen. Ik ben was allemaal ander, dus ziek. Ik ben net zo mijn lichaam weg, mijn andere lichaam, dus geest. Ander persoon geworden. Ik ben een paar maanden door de straat gegaan. Ik wou niet met mensen praten, geest in leven, binnen het leven. En toen is een keer weer wordt wakker, thuis ook af en toe dus wat angst, bang. En toen ben, hoor ik geluid. En toen ben ik kijk in de andere kamer, net iemand zo'n 6 uur. Ik zag iemand. Ik zei, hé, wie is dat? En toen later, ik droeg eens met de deur geopend, ben ik tot daar gelopen. Ik kijk, dat is net verdwenen persoon. Dat is me zo gebeurd.
Hmm.
En toen nog iets gebeurd, ik ben nu overtuigd. Ik ben bezig met de computer. En die computer, dat is van. Ik ben bij uren was bezig. Alles verdwenen gewoon, alles weg. En toen ben ik wel bang geworden, bij angst zo en huilen. Heel veel huilen. Ik zeg echt niet normaal man huilen, dat ben ik ook gebeurd. En toen is. Ik zei: wat moet ik doen? Ik wil die kant lopen, die kant even. Wat moet ik thuis? Paniek helemaal. En toen ben ik een soort kussen gepakt, want die bank is er gevallen, een beetje huilen heel veel en een beetje allemaal wat gek van. En ben slaap gevallen. En dan laten wakker worden, is dan in het begin van de God. Ik huilen en bieden, ook een beetje te schreeuwen. Ik zeg, God, waarom helpt mij niet? Wat ik heb gedaan, wat mijn fout is. Ik probeer altijd goed leven, goed dingetje ben bezig is altijd. Altijd bij school, nooit problemen gehad, is niet gedaan. En toen is ik had even douche na, dus weer, ik ga computer kijken, ik kijk computer, wat verdwenen alles, ga maar terugkomen. Mm. En toen ben ik zeg, nou, wat moet ik doen? Ik moet gewoon proberen dus met iemand met me praten, je moet doen, je moet gewoon anders doen, anders leven.
Mm.
En toen ben ik gekomen bij van jullie, omdat ik dichtbij mijn park ben geweest, die woon ik vlakbij, mm-hmm. Je weet toch. Dan voel ik een beetje gelukkig. En
ja.
Ik vind het leuk wat u ze vertelt.
Ja.
En dat op mijn idee is, ik zie in Amsterdam heel veel mensen problemen.
Ja.
Problemen heel veel.
Ja.
Omdat ik ben werk op buurthuis. Buurthuis, werk op buurt, voor oudere mensen.
Ja.
Maar heel veel mensen problemen, eenzaam, dat meestal mensen komen geen contact met de geloof van God.
Ja.
Doet niet mensen.
Ja.
Maar wat ik zie, heel veel man.
Ja.
Heel goed. Ik geloof mensen in contact en zo, maar problemen
weg.
Dat is denk ik zo.
Ja, soms leven we in een just a little bit in Dutch. Hè. Soms leven we in een situatie waar we niet echt helemaal onszelf zijn. En we draaien daar gewoon jaren in mee, maar ergens zijn we niet tevreden in. En dan op een gegeven moment, dan komt het er toch, komt er iets naar buiten. Ik denk dat dat gebeurd is, en misschien zit er nog wat meer, weet je. Wat er ook allemaal ineens naar buiten gekomen is, wat tot die inzinking geleid heeft van een paar jaar geleden. Ik denk dat je nu op de goede weg bent. Ja. En ik denk dat het belangrijkste is om vooruit te kijken, niet achteruit te kijken. Ja. Gewoon nu echt kijken van waar gaat het naartoe? En als je nu dat je met Krishna bewustzijn begonnen bent, denk ik dat je gewoon in een goede richting gaat. En ik denk dat je bent door een dieptepunt heen gegaan, het gaat nu omhoog. Dus ga verder omhoog. Vind een balans tussen spiritueel en materieel. We hebben dingen nodig, materieel. Dus zorg dat je materieel een beetje rustige situatie hebt, die gewoon niet die vrede geeft. En dan ontwikkel spiritueel daarnaast. Dan is je spirituele leven sterk. Hè? Een goede materiële basis en een goede spirituele ontwikkeling. Ik denk dat je dan een heel nieuw perspectief kan ontwikkelen in je leven. Wat gewoon je aan die moeilijke ervaringen kan doen ontstijgen. Ja. Maar zo houdt wel de balans tussen materieel en spiritueel, denk ik.
Eigenlijk zelf gauw materiaal. Dat is sowieso mijn mens materialist.
Ja.
Maar mensen doen zonder materiaal ook gaat niet. Maar mezelf nooit geluk gebeurt. Gelukkig gaat. Ik ben voor mij hebben ook rijk geweest in de Holland.
Ja.
Alles ook was rijk.
Ja.
Maar we hebben niet geluk.
Nee. Maar nou.
Maar nu voel ik geluk.
Nu kan het komen.
Ja. Ja. Maar weet je wat het ook vreemd is? Misschien moet ik ook niet meer praten. Ik ben jaren geleden, was te jong. Van 15, 16, 18. Maar wist je wat ik zo drie keer heb ik ook in Turkije ook gedaan.
Ja.
Was anders.
Ja.
Maar ook toen ook was geluk.
Ja.
En toen ben ik jaren niet gelukkig.
Ja.
Niet meer gelukkig, maar nu voel ik een beetje geluk rustiger.
Ja.
Ja,
we kunnen er natuurlijk een andere keer nog meer over praten, denk ik. Het is een heel persoonlijk diep punt wat je presenteert. Niet zomaar wat, het is een diep gaand onderwerp. En zo in de groep nu hier is een beetje moeilijk om dat in één keer helemaal diep door te praten. Dus ik zit ook, ik denk van ja, dit is misschien niet het moment om het helemaal volledig te bespreken. Maar ik denk dat je de goede richting aan het opgaan bent. Dat zie ik. Ik denk, je vindt iets in het Krishna-bewustzijn, ga ermee verder. I don't know what else we're doing.
I would like to ask about astral body.
Astral bodies.
Yeah, I read something about it and I'm very curious.
Yeah. Well, we recognize a subtle body and that it's possible to travel in the subtle body outside. So you can actually go outside of this body. The subtle body, according to Bhagavad Gita, is made of mind, mental energy. Intelligence is there. And there is false ego, that means our material conditioning. You know, everyone has a particular mentality conditioned by material nature. So mind, intelligence, false ego. And in that body we can travel, we can go through the wall. Or
this one we take also with the karma to the next life.
Yeah. In that we go to the next life. At the time of death, the soul goes in that subtle body outside of this body and then goes to the next life. And that's why people who have a near-death experience, they can see their bodies lying on the operation table or something like that. And I also have experienced something like that at the time of an accident, out of body. Yeah. I wanted to know where I was. And I went through the wall of the hospital and I looked around. Then I saw people coming, and I saw that they were, you know, there were people that I knew in the car that I knew. And I realized they must be coming for me. I better go back. There's nobody there. That's how Janet said.
But how is it possible to change astral body? By chanting, you're changing astral body?
Right? Yeah, the chanting has an effect on the subtle body. Yeah, yeah, it changes. The astral body, the false ego part, that is bound, is depending on our karma, I wanted to say, something like that. Yeah. On our interaction with the world. So that way, by chanting, it changes.
And because I read that the astral body follows us all the time. So if we are in this life, what we create, the astral body is gonna go. Yeah, it's just staying with us all the time. So how you can?
No, but the process of the Hare Krishna, the chanting of Hare Krishna has an influence on it, can change it. And in this way, it changes very much.
Yeah.
Even otherwise, you know, by karma, it also changes. It's karma. That is. So by your activities, it also changes. I mean, you know, if you commit a murder, you'll never be the same person. You know, from that day on, you'll be, something will have changed in the subtle body. Yeah? To give a crude example, you know, like which everyone would agree to. Yeah? So, in other words, actions have an influence on the subtle body, and there are many positive actions that have an influence on the subtle body.
And only way to leave the astral body is to go to Krishna.
Yes.
Is when the astral body doesn't follow us.
Yes.
But till we don't go to Krishna,
we'll have it.
We have it.
Yes.
Astral body.
Yes.
And this is what.
Excuse me. What word do we use for the astral body?
Subtle.
Subtle.
Subtle. Subtle.
What does our spiritual body look like? Does it have hands, feet?
Everything, yeah, but very nice and beautiful, effulgent. Mm. But same, hands, feet, face, yeah. Similar to this, but perfect.
It's small or bigger?
Some are smaller, some are bigger, just like in this world. But but everyone's beautiful. Everyone's young, everyone's fresh, everyone's ecstatic. Everybody is very effulgent. Also different colors, but not only black, white, yellow, and red. No, they also have green and blue.
Yeah. Can you change that, or that's fixed?
No, it's fixed. You have already the spiritual body. You already have. Yeah, yeah, fixed.
Kind of thing.
But you have mystic power, and if you want, you can have a different manifestation at the same time. You have your original, but you have also mystic power by which you can display other features if you want to.
Like you, you can change dress and hair.
Yeah, you can, but part of it is also that here, you know, it's like it's not this dress is not satisfying, so then I want another one. You know what I mean? So here you always need something new. There everything is so ecstatic that you don't always need to change. So we sometimes think, you know, but can't you change, you know? But maybe you don't want to change there because it's so ecstatic. But if it's for Krishna's service, you can. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita it's described that you can. Yeah, just take different forms for Krishna. Some of the residents, they become birds, you know, for Krishna's pleasure, or different things. They can do. Especially in Vaikuntha, it's described. And Golokas, they can do.
Can I ask something not about this topic?
You can ask something if you want to. If you keep on asking, how long are we going to do this? Are we going to get some prasadam?
You said something about the soul of material basis. Next to material, spiritual development?
Yeah, because...
Do we need that? Because we need, you know.
I mean, if you have to sleep on the street tonight, right? And it's wet and rainy and you have to sleep under the, you know? It's rough. It may be too much. You may not be ready for that. So you may need a place where you can stay tonight. Right? Maybe a nice place. If you don't get to eat something that doesn't taste good, that is not nice, then maybe after some days you just, you know, this Krishna consciousness is too austere. Forget it. And you go to McDonald's. But I'm saying, it's like, so it must be natural. And we are not so liberated that we don't need a supportive material situation. You know? And, you know, especially if someone has a mental situation where he's mentally not peaceful, mentally kind of depressed or disturbed, then it's very important that there's a balanced material situation. You know, never take such people out of their material situation, rather keep them there, but add Krishna consciousness to that situation. Because if you step out of your material situation and you just go for Krishna consciousness, you create a lot of pressure on yourself. So that's only for people who are practicing for a long time and who are very kind of have tried and tested it. They can do the big austerities, right, without getting big reactions. On the mental, on the mind. You put a lot of pressure on your mind if you cut off your material. That's what you're materially accustomed to, right? You know, it's like if we have to live on the streets of Amsterdam for 3 days, then it creates a lot of stress.
Then?
Huh?
Then where is the
Krishna? Yeah, yeah. What if we have to go to Iraq tomorrow? You know. What will happen to our Krishna consciousness in Iraq? You know, somebody may say, "Mommy, I want to go home." You know, may not be so Krishna conscious then. So, whatever. So we go from a good material situation and then forward towards Krishna, and then we can pull a little bit out of the material situation, go deeper in Krishna consciousness, and pull out a little more, okay, then it works.
So it's good to not keep working for the temple, but to just get a job or something.
That depends. But if you just join the temple, if you just decide to join the temple, it's in the beginning it's a shock. It's a shock, you know, if you join the temple. When I joined the temple, after about 1.5 hour, I thought, why did I do this? Right? And I thought, I felt like leaving. And I said to myself, no, you have to stay. And every hour, my mood was changing, because it was a big, big change from my previous life. So it was a mental shock. And it took a little while, it took a few months to settle in, really. That's normal. It's a little drastic. But if you go through that initial period, then you can also very quickly make advancement. So for some people, it's good to move in the temple. But then you have to be bold and brave. And if you're thinking, well, but I'm not so bold, I'm not so sure, maybe not, then just stay in a stable situation where you are and add Krishna consciousness. So it depends on you, on us.